Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, November the 5th, day number 339 of 2013. Time is really flying. Winter is here. We're having a winter watch here in the Dallas area tonight. So we're not going to freeze, but we're going to have a lot of difficulty driving around the Dallas area tonight, but that's okay. You sit back and you listen to our show tonight. Tonight we're going to be chatting about the Obamacare website. And Mandy Nagy is going to be joining us tonight. She'll be joining Leslie Eastman and I tonight, and we're going to be talking about the website. As you know, Mandy is quite an expert on computers and websites, and she's going to give us a rundown of what is happening with the website, some of the improvements they've made, some of the problems that they still have. So we're going to be doing that with Mandy and with Leslie tonight. And then, of course, we'll be hearing from Aaron Clary, his brand new book, and we'll be just having a fun night as we freeze to death here in Dallas, but we'll be on the radio having a good time tonight. Let me just give you a quick word about my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. You can get the book at the Amazon. You can get it print or Kindle, or you can go to our website, cubanosinwisconsin.com, and get yourself a copy of the book that way. One of the beauties of going to the website or our website is that you can get the book dedicated to you. So if you order the book from us, we will dedicate the book. So let's say if you want to impress your Cuban mother-in-law, well, you get her a copy of the book and we'll dedicate it for you. So that's the way to do it. You get yourself a copy of the book at Cubanos in Wisconsin and we'll dedicate it for you. We're going to take a break and we've got Leslie on the other side. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, where we're actually freezing tonight. Temperatures almost 20 degrees with a little bit of rain, but I'm sure everything is lovely in San Diego, where Leslie is speaking with us tonight. How are you, Leslie?
Good. Oh, we're a bit chilly here, too. I think it's somewhere in the 50s now. A little frosty for a Southern California type. So definitely, you know, we're experiencing that pleasurable global warming once again.
That's right. It's global warming tonight as we celebrate another night. Well, tonight we're going to have a great chat about the Obamacare website. Mandy's going to be joining us in a couple of minutes. But I want to begin saying hello to a brand new friend of our show, and I'm talking about Veronica Perez Kearney in Houston, who, by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that her daughter and my son just got engaged a few days ago, so I have a personal interest in promoting this lady's business. How are you, Veronica? Welcome.
I'm doing great. How are you, Silvio?
Fine. How is that that beautiful daughter of yours doing?
Well, she's trying to stay warm in Dallas. I know that it's quite cold up there tonight, so probably snuggled and trying to stay warm. I know that Silvio is visiting her, so probably staying warm.
That's right. Well, we certainly hope so. Say hello to Leslie, who is also known as the goddess of capitalism.
Yes. Hello, and congratulations, and may the goddess ever favor your business, and may it be prosperous.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's good to meet you, Leslie.
Yes, yes.
Well, tell me, Veronica, tell me about this great business of yours. I've tasted these chocolates. They are second to none. So tell me about them.
Well, I'm just really excited that you're inviting me on the show and giving me the opportunity to talk about the chocolates. And our, you know, the business is more than just about the chocolates, but it is a 72% cocoa. It is handmade. It's a European style. They're smaller than, you know, a large bonbon, so they're just petite, very delicious. What we don't do is we do not put preservatives, additives, or any kind of chemicals in the chocolate. So when a person has a piece of this chocolate, it's just pure, unadulterated chocolate, and it's very satiating. And that's what I think our customers are just after is you can have a bar of chocolate with other types and not really feel like you've actually had some. So our chocolate is just good to the last drop or good to the last bite, if you will, and it's because of that. But, of course, it's a handmade product, so we make it right there in the shop on the premise, and that's the reason we don't need to put any preservatives in it is because it goes right from the kettle pretty much right into the customer's mouths.
And I bet that this is a busy time of the year for you.
Absolutely. The absolute busiest time of the year is the holidays in December. The other time of year that's really just crazy nuts is Valentine's Day because Valentine's is like Christmas but just squished into like a 3 to 4 day period. So it's just really, really fun. I love it. And like I was saying, it's more than just a piece of chocolate what we do because we celebrate really fun events, people's lives. We celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, you know, just all kinds of special occasions, baby showers. I mean, I even had a customer one time come in and the way that she told her family that she was actually having twins, it was a girl and a boy. She didn't even know. She actually gave me the envelope straight from the doctor and had me do cake balls that we do as well and dipped them in chocolate. We did pink cake balls for the girl and blue cake balls for the baby boy. And so I gave her two boxes. She says, if they're both girls, then just do pink in both boxes, you know, or if they're both boys. But they happen to be a girl and a boy, and I knew before she did. So it's just fun things like that that happen in the shop that I just really just love what I do.
That's great. Leslie, do you like chocolates?
I must admit I'm a bit allergic. So, yes, I love them, but I have chocolate only rarely.
We do have people that come into the shop and have allergic reactions, you know, but they buy chocolates for others in their families and friends. And but, yeah, I've run across that situation with people who can't have the chocolate for one reason or another. There's an allergic reaction there.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I don't have more is because I need to control my weight. But I mean, I can eat lots of chocolate. That's never been a problem for me. I just have to control my myself. Well, we have a link to your website on the show information, and I just want to wish you the very best with your business. And of course, as I said at the top, you know, I have a vested interest now in promoting your chocolates because we are family now.
We
will be family officially, I guess, when the wedding happens sometime, you know, hopefully soon. But it's you have a beautiful daughter, a beautiful family, a wonderful husband, and I love your mother who makes wonderful Cuban coffee. And that's I had a taste of that over Thanksgiving. So please give my best to all of your family and keep making those chocolates. And I hope you have the best year that you've ever had.
Well, thank you so much, Silvio. Thank you very much. I just wanted to just mention that I have started reading your book, Cubanos in Wisconsin.
Oh, thank you.
I do have it in the shop. What we did is we tied a red ribbon around it and put a chocolate cigar in the ribbon, so it looks really nice. And I'm just excited about reading the book. I'm about a quarter of way through. And what struck me about the book is that it really captures, you know, it just captured my attention right away. And it's okay. Not like just another story, you know, just another Cuban story. It really is very interesting the way that it describes the experience as, you know, your family left the island. And it mixes in a little Cuban history and some politics and just from an eye of a boy who left his home. Just a very warm, loving, and just fun, interesting, educational read. And
I just really
want to recommend it because, like I said, it just captures your attention right away. And I can't
wait to get
to the end of it and finish it.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for saying that. And you have a wonderful evening
in
Houston. We're freezing here in Dallas. But you have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for joining us. And I wish you the very best on your business, and have a great end of year.
All right. Thank you so much, and good luck with the rest of the show. We'll see you all later.
Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Veronica Kearney in the chocolate business, and we have a link to the information on the show information. But anyway, Leslie, I love chocolate, so I have to admit that I have a weakness for it, and the only thing that I have to do is not eat so many of them because otherwise I'll gain weight.
Well, yeah, I can imagine the wedding will be most festive with lots of little chocolate treats for the guests.
Yes.
That will be the wedding of the year, to be sure.
Yes, and in fact, what's interesting about these chocolates is when we had our book, we had a big book party a few months ago, you may remember, that Veronica made us some chocolates for that as well. So there were some pictures in Facebook that we have of those chocolates. So it was an absolutely wonderful time. But let's talk about tonight. Mandy's going to be joining us here in a minute. But, you know, on this day in history, Leslie, 1933, that would make it 80 years ago. It was the end of Prohibition. You know, we had passed this amendment, I guess, in 1920 or whatever it was, and then it was reversed in 1933 when Prohibition was actually reversed. The only time in American history that we passed an amendment and then came back later and repealed it. So historic and interesting on this day in history in 1933. That's 80 years ago, Leslie.
Well, I would like to expand on that just a bit on a program I was actually watching recently covering that era. Do you know what the wettest city in the United States was, the city that broke the most prohibition rules?
Well, no, give me a clue. I was going to say Vegas, but that's too easy an answer.
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, how they're handling Obamacare is a great indication of how they handled prohibition.
Let's see, Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
So
they wrote the law, and then they broke it.
Yes, God bless them. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Well, that's a wonderful amendment or addition to the story. But let's say hello to Mandy, who's probably wondering why we're talking about chocolates. How are you, Mandy?
I'm good. How are you, too?
Absolutely.
Well, good. We've been discussing chocolate and alcohol. So we're pretty ready to pile on and talk about Obamacare now.
Well, chocolates and alcohol fits right in legal insurrection, I would think. I would think the professor would love those, too.
I don't know, but I live on those, so. Okay, maybe not alcohol so much, but, you know, I have my fair share.
No, we're bloggers. Yeah. We thrive on caffeine.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we are freezing to death here in Dallas. It's really very, very cold, about 20 or so. Lots of wind, a little bit of rain, so we're having an unusually cold night. We don't get too many of these. We got one tonight. And how about in your part of the world, Mandy, what's it like?
It was warm today, but it's actually getting colder tonight, and we're supposed to we're getting warnings that we are supposed to get some sort of snow this week, so I expect it's going to get cold.
So Leslie is the only one who can go swimming of the three of us.
Not at temperatures of 50 degrees. I told you, I'm a hothouse flower. It drops below 70, and I'm grabbing a sweater.
Okay, all right. Well, it'll go over 70 in San Diego, I'm sure.
Well, anyway, that's cold snap for us.
yes. Anyway, but let's talk a little bit about the Obamacare website, Mandy. But before we do, I always like our guests to tell us a little bit about themselves. I know you've been on the show before, but I'm hoping there are some new listeners tonight to tell us about yourself.
Sure. Well, I am a writer at Legal Insurrection, and I also do a tech column over at Breitbart called Cyberbeat. That's just a collection of various tech and social media stories. For the few years before that, I wrote full-time at Breitbart, doing more investigative pieces. And before that, I actually spent quite a few years in the corporate world, working in various roles, primarily in technology, some in marketing, but I worked at a few companies like LexisNexis, where I got my research, a lot of my research interest, and some telecommunications companies working in technology. So, you know, I sort of made the rounds and come here and ended up blogging for the last several years.
And I suppose the last thing you thought you'd be blogging about or blogging about would be websites.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought I'd pretty much be doing politics and, you know, I've moved into tech. It's interesting because tech and politics have sort of collided, and I guess we're seeing a lot of that now with the Obamacare website. But I didn't expect to be writing about, you know, problems with government websites.
That's right. Well, I'm sure Leslie has a bunch of questions. I just had a quick one to get us started. What exactly is going on right now with the website? As I understand it, okay, they changed a few things, and November 30th, I guess last Friday or Monday of this week, they restarted it. Not restarted it, but I mean they went out with a new, I guess a new program or whatever. But now they're apparently having, as I understand it, some privacy problems where information that you're putting in is, at, you know, you could be risking or compromising your personal information. And then sometime tonight, I hope you'll explain to me what they mean by the back end is not working. So you'll hopefully explain that to me and to our listeners. So why don't we begin with that? Where is the website today? And then I'll pass it over to Leslie. I'm sure she's got some great questions for you.
Sure. Well, I'll start with the back end stuff. What's going on there is that it was sort of a big deal about 2 weeks or so ago when I think it first really became evident during some congressional testimony that the back-end part of the system that actually takes the payments between the insurers and is what essentially is what constitutes the start of a policy, because, you know, policy can't become effective until the first payment is made. So the back end that's supposed to do that is actually not even built yet. Now, that doesn't mean that people still can't make their payments directly to the insurers, and I would imagine a lot of people do it that way anyway, but for those who want to actually go through the entire process and do everything on the website, you can't actually process the payment on the website at this time. That part is not, that back end accounting part is not built. So that led a lot of people.
May I interrupt you for a second? Mm-hmm. Because that is almost, I mean, that's mind-boggling to me that somehow they didn't do this when they built the website. I mean, if I have a service and I want to sell it on the internet, and I go to you and I say, Mandy, I want you to make me a website, I am going to assume that when you tell me it's ready, that means that people can buy, let's say my book, for example. You can go to our website, and you can buy our book, and you can pay for it, and we'll ship it to you. Now, again, I'm talking about my book is obviously a very small enterprise compared to the government, but still the basics are there in the website. So if you made a website for me, and I learned later that people could not buy directly from the website, I think I would call you and ask you for an explanation.
Yeah. Well, I think what really complicated matters a whole lot is the fact that when they first launched the project and started working on it, they didn't know at that time how many of the state exchanges the federal exchange was going to have to pick up. You know, so, I mean, the way it works is that for every state that decided to forego doing their exchange, the federal government had to build that into the website. So, for example, I'm in New Jersey where we don't have a state exchange. I have to purchase my, or at least pick out my policy through the federal exchange on healthcare.gov. I don't do that through a state exchange, at least as far as I understand. I haven't got through the process yet, which I'll tell you about later. but so that, you know, the government didn't know from the beginning how many of those they were going to have to pick up. So I think as that number increased, you know, more and more states opted out of doing exchanges and the federal government had to pick that up, their scope of work got much bigger than they, you know, initially thought that it was going to be. I mean, I think if I were them, I probably would have done it the opposite way. I would have started from the assumption that we were going to have to build all of the state exchanges into the system and then, you know, been able to actually reduce the scope of work rather than increase it as more were added. So I think that's what really complicated matters for them, because obviously once you get into having to take care of each of these different states' customers, the work increases, and they were looking for areas where they could lop off work. And unfortunately, the back-end accounting part for that ended up on the list of things that they decided to cut down on the scope, because they figured they didn't need it right away. People weren't going to actually need to start actually paying for it immediately. So, but you know, the question it brings up is that how are we determining enrollment numbers if a lot of these people who are signing up aren't necessarily making the payments through the system, and some of the back-end part of this isn't built yet. Like, it's that part's really fuzzy. It's very unclear. You know, a lot of us are asking questions about how is this accounted for. My guess is, I'm assuming from what I've read, it sounds like the insurers are still able to manually keep track of, you know, or at least estimate what the numbers are, but we're not really going to see exact numbers, I don't think, for quite some time.
Fascinating. Well, I know Leslie's a lot smarter than I am when it comes to computers, so let me turn it over to Leslie.
No. You know, Mandy is, I'm definitely a Padawan compared to her master, because I can blog okay, but I'm still learning daily, you know, thanks to her. But I'd like to point out that the federal exchange is not the only one with problems. And there's a hot news item out of California today that you'll be among the first to hear because it just broke. As many as 35,000 applicants under Covered California, which is our exchange, the application has been faxed, but the data has yet to be entered in the system, and it's not likely all of it's going to be entered in by January 1st. So people could be waking up in early 2014 thinking they have health insurance and yet not. And this is not the only state or incident for which this to be a problem, and there are a lot of insurers commenting the federal website is not, you know, conveying the information necessary for them to process the insurance applications properly. Mandy, do you know more of this?
Yeah, that's been one of the big problems that people can't see on the front end, is that, and this was a problem from the very beginning, even during the, you know, quote-unquote testing phase, what little testing they did, the insurers were pretty loudly complaining, saying, we're not doing enough testing here, and this isn't ready. The stuff that we're getting on our end is garbage. It's not, we're getting stuff that's incorrect. We're getting stuff that's missing. In some cases, they weren't even receiving records. So they were complaining from the very start and saying that, you know, that the system should be, you know, delayed at least for a little bit, because they were concerned about this. And the more obviously that we promote the website, the more that they worried about this, the amount of work increasing, because it obviously increases the manual labor load now, which is exactly what they're doing. They're having it to have people fax in the information, people taking information over the phone. But what people have to remember is that they still have to go on the back end and enter some of this information, and at the same time, it's also the back end that does some of the accounting process for the insurers. So, you know, there's just a lot that's still not working properly, and it's not necessarily things that we can see on the front end as consumers.
Have you had a chance to go in and play in the website a little bit and see if there any of these so-called enhancements and improvements have actually kicked in?
Yeah, well, I haven't had a chance to write about this yet because I'm actually waiting to see what happens with customer service. But here's what happened to me. After the site, quote, relaunched, I know they're saying they don't want people to call it a relaunch, but for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it a relaunch. After it relaunched with the supposed fixes in place, I waited a day, and then I went back on and tried to log in with any of my numerous former accounts that I created, but have never been able to work, and none of those worked still. So I created yet a new account. I'm up to somewhere between 8 and 10 accounts. I think it's about 8 accounts that I've created.
Congratulations. You may be the most insured person in America.
Yeah, if only that were the case. So I created an account. I got my verification email saying I successfully created an account and clicked on the link, verified the account. And then went to log in with it, and sure enough, it came right back. It said, the information you entered is not correct. Now, being that I had just created this, and I copied and pasted everything and to make sure that I absolutely didn't have it wrong, there's no way that the information I entered was wrong. This is what's been happening to me all along. So I called the call center. I walked the guy through everything. I explained to him that I've created anywhere between 8 and 10 accounts and that every time I've called the call center, they've told me to create a new account, and the new account doesn't work. So I let him know that I had just done this and it still didn't work. And I have to say, he was a very pleasant guy, very helpful, very cheery. So I don't harbor any ill will toward him. But the first thing he said was, he kind of chuckled and he said, well, normally I would suggest to you that the next thing you need to do is create a new account. But
wow.
Thankfully, he instead escalated it, and I guess he entered a ticket, and he said it goes into some escalation level, and someone will call me in 2 to 5 business days. So that's
wow.
Where I'm at now.
Yeah, well, we're going to take a little break. We're going to bring Aaron Clary, and then we'll continue with your story, Mandy, and Leslie. But I just had a quick reaction, Leslie and Mandy. Whenever I've gone into a website, let's say you go in and you open an account and you use your email as your identification or whatever, which is what a lot of these services do. If I go in later and it'll tell me somewhere along the line, you've already created an account. So this is why I don't understand why they're asking you to make more than – do you follow what I'm saying?
That's actually the problem. I think that's why I'm having this problem, because in the system, you have to use your email address to create the account. If you don't have one, they actually will – they direct you to create an email address.
Right.
So I think that's actually part of the problem, is that that's the what you call the unique identifier that's associated to everybody's account. And I think because I created one on that first day that the site launched back on October 1st, I think I ended up in, this weird tech purgatory. And I think until they get rid of that first account, everything that uses that email address is just not going to work.
So they're going to have to delete the 6 people who signed up the first day. Otherwise, it'll never work.
And it's going to cause the enrollment numbers to crash.
Right. I tell you, it's really remarkable how, I have to tell you, as I said, I am not very sophisticated on these topics, but common sense, I mean, a lot of this stuff just seems to me a lot of common sense. Somewhere along the line, there was a real breakdown in how this thing was put together. But we'll get back to it in the second segment. Mandy, let's say hello to Aaron Clary, who's probably warmer than we are here in Dallas, even though he's in Minnesota. How are you, Aaron?
It's 0 degrees. Is that warmer or colder than what it is in Dallas?
Okay, then you are colder. Okay. I take it back. Say hello to Leslie and Mandy.
Hello.
Hello, ladies.
Hello, Aaron.
How you guys doing?
We're well, considering that Mandy's been fighting back on the Obamacare exchange valiantly.
Well, see, Aaron, I think you were hearing the part where Mandy said she had created 8 different accounts to get into Obamacare. That's like proposing 8 times to a woman to get married.
Okay. Boy, one is too many times already. I don't know why you do it 8 times, but yeah.
Well, I know, but that's how difficult. If Obamacare was a lady, you would have to, propose to her 8 times.
Yeah, I'd be going overseas for a mail-order bride then. I think that's
right.
What we'd have to do.
Well, that might be a little quicker. That website might work a lot better than this one. Well, tell us about Captain Capitalism and that new book of yours.
Well, Captain Capitalism is the blog I run, captaincapitalism.blogspot.com, and that is the headquarters for my little individual media empire. So I got a YouTube channel, I got the blog, I have a podcast. And then the new book I'm coming out with, that's called Bachelor Pad Economics, and I will be finishing it up tonight, actually, and it will go off to the editors, and we're going to chumma right along, and should be up and available for sale just in time to get it delivered on Christmas Eve or the 23rd.
That'd be great. Now, Leslie, I understand, was editing your book, right, Leslie?
Yeah, I had the privilege of editing 3 chapters, and I personally love the chapter on entrepreneurship. And for me, as I'm trying to run a small business, it actually had some valuable tips and tricks. And, Aaron may say it's the bachelor for bachelors, but I think the bachelorettes could get a fair amount of information from it that'd be useful too. So really encourage everybody when it comes out, especially if you've got somebody young in your life, definitely a worthy gift for Christmas.
That's right. Well, and of course, you have another great book called Worthless, and that book is also pretty relevant today because we're hearing a great deal about these college loans and all these kids with college loans. So I think you've been hitting it out of the park, Aaron, with some of these books you're writing.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you see more and more of those articles about kids waking up and enrollments going down and the liberal arts having to shut down their campus, but boy, I run out into more and more kids nowadays that are delusional, and they get upset if you tell them not to major in English or philosophy. So I think the market for that's going to stick around a bit. But, yeah, we are definitely turning the tides on that. And I like to think Worthless had, maybe was the little snowflake or two that might have caused a little bit of an avalanche. But, yeah, so it's definitely making some progress and helping out a lot of kids out there.
Yeah, we're going to start calling you the Christopher Columbus of student loans. You're the one who, you're the one who found the new way to the new land.
Yeah. Well, or just not being impoverished and financially crippled by the age of 25.
That's right. Well, listen, Aaron, thanks for joining us tonight. As always, it's a great honor to say hello. And how can people get your books?
Just go to Amazon.com, look them up by title, Worthless, Enjoy the Decline. Bachelor Pad Economics, that's not up there yet. Or just search my name, Aaron Clary, and you'll find them.
Excellent. We're going to tell the listeners to do that. Thank you so much for joining us. Go back to your tundra, or whatever you call it up there.
We call it the North Pole. I saw Santa. We just had a shot of whiskey together.
Well, I hope he's doing well.
He's doing well. That's it. All right. We'll see you guys later.
All right. Thank you, Aaron Clary. Right. Let's get back to Mandy and the website. I'm not sure exactly where we were, Mandy, but I think you were telling us that you had just opened 8 accounts, and that's where you got stuck. I think that's where she was, Leslie, right?
Yeah. Now, actually, this will segue nicely into the next problem, because I have been capturing the problems as they rolled out, and it's been a continual stream of them. And this particular one is the honor system issue, where Mandy has all these 8 accounts and she's entering in data, and the part of what Obamacare is supposed to do is give you a subsidy if you don't make a lot of money, your family of four, not making a certain amount above the poverty level, you're entitled to a certain amount of subsidy to help you pay for the health care and out-of-pocket costs. And the out-of-pocket costs you would face also is based on your income. And right now, the IRS has no real way to verify any of this information. So when the time comes, they're going to have to rely on the honor system. And that won't encourage fraud, will it? Aunt Mandy, do you have a few thoughts on this?
Well, my understanding was that the honor system applied to the insurer side, that the insurers were not entirely, because the back end part is not yet, they have to
guesstimate.
And essentially, like, the way it would work is that the insurers would say, okay, here's how much you owe me for the policies that have been created, and the government cuts a check, or I'm assuming that's how it works. So right now, they have to estimate what those are and just tell the government this is what the amount is. Rather than keeping a clear counting of it, because that back end part is not there.
Yeah.
No, well, corporations wouldn't do any sort of fraud either, would they?
No,
although
I'll tell you, it would be pretty stupid if any of them committed fraud, because these are insurers that are signed up into the system, and I would imagine there's going to be some pretty harsh crackdown if once this is built and there's fraud discovered. That's got to be pretty difficult to get out of. So I think you got to be pretty stupid to do something like that.
But what I don't get, you know, again, just my business experience coming out here. Normally, every time that I have purchased an insurance product, life, you know, any kind of liability or, you know, casualty or whatever insurance, you give a check with your application. And that's
right.
Almost, I mean, without the check, without the payment, well, I mean, you they won't even take an application. It has to be a very, well, there are some unusual situations, like if you're buying a very large life insurance policy, you know, like $1 million or $2 million or something, sometimes they don't take money on stuff like that. But I'd say most the other 90% of the policies, they require at least your first month to do the underwriting. In this case, as I understand it, no money has been exchanged. Nobody has actually written a check or used their debit card or whatever to make a payment, right?
Well, see, yeah, that's where I'm not clear. It doesn't seem like it, but I really don't know, because it's not clear in the reporting. It seems like I said, since the back end doesn't necessarily exist yet, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know if the insurers are reporting that people have cut checks. We don't know that because we're not privy to that information. So I think that's a big part of what people are trying to get to. People are trying to find out if there have been any checks cut.
Well, they're also having a very difficult time, Leslie. I know you've been following this. I've seen several things you've written about this, that they're having a very difficult time, like you say, with numbers. I mean, they don't have a clue of how many people have gone into Medicare, how many people have gone into the actual policies, what is the demographics, because as I understand, they need something like 40% of the applicants or 40% of the policy owners are going to have to be under 35. Otherwise, it just the numbers won't add up.
Well, here's actually segues nicely into something I want to talk to Mandy about. The concept of Obamacare was that you have a pool of 18 to 26-year-olds who are out of the pool. Why? Because they can go on their parents' policies. So at this point, if you're relying on the under 30 set, you've got 27 to 30-year-olds who are supposed to be really supplementing the monies that the retirees and the aging baby boomers will be needing. And I just don't see how the numbers roll out this way.
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself. I mean, the question I had was, what are the parents' policy, what do their numbers look like? Are they paying extra because their kids are on the policy? And if they are, is the extra amount enough to kind of make up for that, and does that get accounted into the system? Because if it doesn't, then it seems like a big chunk of that pool that's supposed to be there is just not going to be there.
And what's interesting, though, is I think our young Americans are beginning to catch a clue, because there was a new survey out of Harvard Institute of Politics saying that the majority of Americans under the age of 25, the youngest millennials, would favor throwing Obama out of office. And his approval ratings have gone down substantially, to the point that if the election were reheld today, he could not probably get reelected, because the margins in amongst the young people that he got the first time are nowhere there.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see what some of these numbers look like, and people, it's not even just Obamacare, some of those polls that came out were showing that they don't have a lot of trust in his leadership, and I think his promise on the health care, if you like your health insurance plan, you can keep it. Him not really being truthful about that promise has really done a lot to hurt his image, and people feel that he's not necessarily exhibiting the leadership skills that they thought that he had when they first voted for him or supported him.
Yeah, no,
that's
no,
right.
It's definitely crashing. And I think Bill on Legal Insurrection today had another post up that the approval rating for Obama has really taken the dive among poor Hispanics and whites, looking at double-digit declines in the job approval rating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's across the board. Yeah, you're right about that.
And it's hard, because unless you actually put him up against a candidate, it's really hard to know exactly how things would turn out, because look at how sure so many people on our side were during the last election. Everyone was like, oh, there's no way he can get reelected. Look at how bad things are. And, for whatever reason, people just didn't turn on him the way that a lot of people expected to have happen, even with the numbers that he had. So I think unless you put a candidate up against him, it's hard to really know.
Right, and that's always the case, that when you're running, I know we had the same thing with Bush back in 2004.
Argue that with Bush, the press was solidly against Bush.
I mean, trying to make the job numbers
a recession, whereas they've been very protective of Obama. So to see these numbers under a very protective press, I think is fascinating.
I don't disagree. I think you're exactly right, Leslie. But I was just simply saying that the concern, if the Obama administration, the concern that they have to have with young people, it's not just the young people are not buying into Obamacare, and I have a question about that from Andy later, but the other problem is so many young people, and both of you at College Insurrection, you might be able to talk about this tonight, young people don't know much about Obamacare. In this poll that came out, a lot of young people are saying, well, I don't know much about it, and that, I think, is a real problem. Now, despite all the information that has been put out there about Obamacare, they still don't know, Leslie. I mean, you write for College Insurrection. You write about young people or talk to young people all the time. Did that surprise you that young people didn't know anything about this?
Well, I am very privileged to read writings from young conservatives who are very informed. It's likely their compatriots are more aware of Obama's use of drones and the national security concerns.
Yeah.
That's where they're having issues with the Obama administration.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and if you look at some of the other trends over the last year or two, there have been some reports out there that the younger demographic has actually started to move more libertarian. It's kind of like cool to be libertarian now, whereas, a couple of years ago, people thought libertarians were wacky. But
I have some libertarian friends, indeed, and I love them for it. But, you know, that the young people are making libertarianism the cool young thing to the point. There's an Ayn Rand statement on a T-shirt now, you know, channeling the Che Guevara look, gives me hope that maybe they can take the best elements of libertarianism and do something useful with them.
Yeah, and I think that's an important
not
point.
With Che, but one quick second, Mandy, forgive me for a second. Not with Che Guevara T-shirts. That's not libertarian. That's communist. That's something else. If they want to do, if they want to do.
Ann replaces Che on T-shirts on American campuses, we've gone a long way, baby.
Right. No, I agree with that. But I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that there was nothing libertarian or good about Che. He was a criminal. But
yeah.
You're right about the other one. Mandy, go ahead, please. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think it's an important point that I think a lot of the younger demographic is very aware of, less aware of Obamacare, but more upset about things like drones and the NSA. I would venture to say that the NSA stuff, I think, really has done a lot of damage to this administration. And it really has brought in a whole new segment of people that really weren't paying attention before, because for whatever reason, this resonates with a lot of younger people. I would think because they're using a lot of technology, and this is something that's important to them. And it's interesting to see some of the change that's happened. And like I said, I do think a lot of them are starting to lean more libertarian and make it more sort of a cool in thing these days, which sort of works in the favor against Obama, because Obama's not viewed as a very libertarian president anymore.
No.
Oh, definitely
no,
not. I'd like to turn the
sure.
subject just a little bit on another topic that's been in the news, not so much, but I think is quite important. You've been covering it, Ukraine. Why
mm-hmm.
don't you give us a rundown of what's been happening in the Ukraine?
Yeah. Well, I myself wasn't really even that plugged into it when the protests first started coming up, and I had to read up on, you know, what was really going on there. What's happening is in Ukraine, you've got kind of the country is sort of separated in two. The eastern portions of Ukraine are more more closely tied to Russia. I mean, that's sort of their roots, and a lot of them speak Russian, and they're supportive of the current government there. But the western portion of the country is more supportive of moving toward being integrated, more integrated with Europe. And what's happened is that the Ukrainian president a couple of weeks ago was expected to sign an association agreement with the European Union, which would have integrated the country more closely with Europe, and there would be different free trade deals with them that would have had long-term benefits for the country, which is financially struggling right now. But the problem is that Russia has wanted to keep hold of Ukraine because, you know, being right there and being such an economic partner to Russia, where the Ukraine is a large consumer of Russia's energy. And what people have said has happened is that in order for Russia to try and keep a stronger hold on them, they, you know, threatened various trade sanctions and increase in gas prices and various other things to try and make it so that Ukraine would not move forward with the association agreement with the European Union. And so when the president declined to sign that agreement, it really shocked a lot of people because they've been working toward that direction for years, and people expected that they would sign it. So the EU leaders really issued some sharp condemnations and criticism against Russia, accusing Russia of bullying the Ukraine over this. And it really triggered that's what triggered the protest. But at this point, the protests aren't even necessarily just about the president's refusal to sign the association agreement. It's a larger thing now. It's turned into this more of like an anti-government movement. A big part of that is because when the protests first started up, they were largely peaceful. You know, there are always some provocateurs amongst the crowds, but they were largely peaceful, and the immediate crackdown from authorities there was pretty brutal. It was a lot like what we saw in Turkey, and as soon as the crackdown came, there was quite a bit of criticism, and even people in the eastern portion of the country started to voice concerns about the current government, even though they've been rather supportive. So you've got more of this anti-government sentiment going on there, and a lot of people really clamoring about wanting to move and open up negotiations again with the EU over the association agreement. But it's important to the United States. People keep asking me, why should we
sure.
care about this? It's important to us because, or it should be important to us, because it's better for us. If the Ukraine moves more toward the EU and less from Russia's grip, that's helpful to the United States. I mean, I think it goes without saying that Putin wants to be, you know, the world power. He's been taunting the U.S. and doesn't really want people to see the U.S. as any kind of strength of power anymore. And for Putin to keep control or any kind of influence over the Ukraine just feeds into that over there. So for us, it's better, actually, if Ukraine were to move more toward integration with the EU.
Well, also, Mandy, as I recall, from just reading about Ukraine over the last, just in reading about Ukraine over the years, they're the breadbasket, aren't they, of Russia? I mean,
yeah.
that was the big breadbasket of Russia. It was the only part of Russia, because of the temperatures, one of the areas where they can grow food a little bit easier.
Yes, that's a big part of it, and of course the energy consumption. And you know, I think Russia really seems to be taking advantage of this now, because Ukraine is in financial distress right now. Mm. And so, you know, I don't know what the exact terms of the agreement that Russia would have, you know, is offering to them. I don't know the exact terms of what that is, but I would imagine that they were offering things to try and sweeten relations with Russia and make it so that the gas prices would stay down, or at least, you know, not be raised as much as they were threatening, and probably offered to lend the country some money. And I don't know that the EU, you know, I don't know what the financial package is for the EU in the short term. You know, I think Russia was able to offer some things that would give the country much more short-term relief, but the EU agreement would be more of a long-term, have much more long-term benefits, and the younger people there seem to be able to understand that and are fighting for that. They want long-term stability and more integration with the EU, and are less concerned with the immediate impacts as some of the other people in the country are.
Yeah. Well, we're just about out of time, Mandy, and I just wanted, if you could take a minute and just tell us what you think is going to happen next, you know, because we're actually in the third month of the Obamacare website.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is running better, to be fair, than what it was before, but you still have a lot of problems. Privacy is one of the issues we didn't get into tonight, but that's a big problem from what I understand, right?
Yes, it still is a problem. You're starting to see privacy issues pop up in certain states. I believe one of the state exchanges, if I remember correctly, it was Vermont, had a major privacy issue come out too. So it's not just the federal exchange either. I think what's going to happen is this is going to be like a long, slow leak, because you don't have a huge rush of people right now. And I think that the more that they start promoting the site and the more people that start coming on board, like I've said in the past when we talked about this, you're really not going to get complete depth of the problems until the volume of people who are actually using the site, not just going there and visiting, but actually signing up and using it, creating accounts, you're really not going to get the depth of the issues until more of those are there, and that's going to happen over a period of months. And I think that's what will happen is as more time passes, more and more is going to leak out about what problems there are, and we'll start to see repeat occurrences of things. And it's just it seems to me like it's just going to be this slow leak of issues. And, I don't know how long that goes on for and what the solution is.
Well, it'll go into the 2014 election, and this is going to be a big issue. But so the next time we have you on, Mandy, sometime,
in January,
I guess in the very
we're going to have Alistair on the first week I'm back, and then Mandy's going to come on the second week. She doesn't know this yet, but she is. And
So when you come back, Mandy, will you tell us that you have now opened 20 accounts?
Probably. I don't know. We'll see. I'm waiting for them to call me. They have two more days.
So if that has happened to you, Mandy, that's happened. It's got to happen to a bunch of other people.
Oh, it's definitely happened. I've talked to people in my family who have been trying to sign create an account, and they weren't able to create one either. So, no, it's definitely happening, and I think you'll hear more of those. And, you know, I'm trying to be fair and let them see how they resolve it. That's why I haven't written about it yet. I actually was going to post about it the other day, and then I thought, well, let me see how the customer service thing works out, and then I'll kind of write about what my experience was.
Yeah, well, I think you've been very fair, actually, in writing about this. I think you've been very fair and objective, but, you know, we are talking about a turkey. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it.
And definitely.
It is a problem. But I do want to thank you so much for joining us. And every time we have you on the show, it just time flies, Leslie. We're going to have to divide Mandy into parts.
I'm grateful that she came on tonight. I was so looking forward to an update. And, you know, that we have her on, I guess we can start wishing everybody a very happy holiday season.
Absolutely,
Same to you guys.
Yeah.
So do you guys at Legal Insurrection, do you have like a Christmas party, like a virtual Christmas party since you're all spread out? I mean, do you have like a party, you use Skype and you also have a birthday party?
Yeah, we had to propose that to Bill Jacobson. We could all Skype each other, you know, pour a little eggnog and have
I was thinking about that. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I mean, but thank you so much, Mandy. Thank you so much for joining us
anytime.
Tonight. You're absolutely wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Well, Leslie, tell us about, Christmas is 2 weeks away, so we don't have a lot of shows left this month. So what's coming up next?
Yeah, here's the rundown. We have I have a very good friend who's very supportive of my blogging and punditry effort, who has a daughter-in-law who will become the Canto Talk psychologist.
Right.
Every good talk show needs a psychologist.
Absolutely.
What we're going to do is ask her about various holiday issues that arise. For example, one of the topics we can chat about is, you know, how to handle holiday stress, how to bring up politics or should it arise around the table, and how to diffuse the situation, and how to maybe make some sound New Year's resolution. So it's a lot of, you know, psychology-oriented questions and gives her an opportunity to promote her business, which I'm really excited to do. Her name is Rochelle, and she's next week's guest, and I'm so looking forward
to
talking to her.
That sounds like a great idea.
I thought it was pretty neat, and that puts a somebody who's you know got all these really wonderful insights on human behavior in our Rolodex, because it's been a strange world for the past year. We've covered a lot of intriguing topics.
That's right.
It would be nice to have somebody explain some of this.
That's right.
and
sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, and then the
I'm
show that follows
that.
Is with Barry Jacobson to discuss Christmas events that, you know, involve the military history as it occurred around the holiday season where Christmas might have influenced it. And
well, there's
got
some
a couple
good ones.
Topics.
There's, there's some good topics on that. There's some several things that happened. You know, the Battle of the Bulge comes to mind initially back in 1944. That was right at Christmas time.
Yeah, and there was a truce. There was a Christmas Eve truce between the British and German forces during World War I. And of all the events related to Christmas, that's probably the one that we really need to feature. It's a special story.
Right.
And looking forward to sharing it. And then I'm taking a couple weeks off and drinking excessively and forgetting about politics for as much as I can.
That's good.
2 weeks.
That's good for you. That's good for you to do that. And we're done for tonight. Thank you so much. We're out of time. But as always, thank you so much for your participation. And thank you for all the great connections you make for the show. And you have a wonderful evening. And
you too,
we'll talk next week. Next week we'll have the psychologist, right?
Definitely, and maybe your wife wants to chime in with a few questions she may have. So you know,
well, she may have a few questions about me. You know, she wants to understand me better.
So
you never know.
You may want to let her know this might be her golden opportunity to chime in.
That's right. After all these years, she finally can understand me. All right. Well, thank you, and good night, Leslie.
Good night, Silvio.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to our show tonight. And we'll talk to you next time. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.